screwed up.
We'll call the House Tax Committee to order. We do not, at this point, do we have a quorum? I think we might. Okay, we're not quite at a quorum. When we do have a quorum, we will break in and officially call the meeting to order. We have a full agenda today. We're going to just amend the minutes here. We're going to have... We do have a quorum? Okay, don't have a quorum yet. What we're going to be doing is, as I said in the last meeting, we're going to be allowing House Research to make a presentation regarding some spreadsheets. So that will be first. And then if you look at your agenda, as is my tradition for the ninth straight year as chairman, is to hear a DFL bill first. The bill we'll be hearing is a Mahoney bill establishing a Minnesota Science and Technology Program. We will be hearing that first. We will be laying that over because Representative Mahoney has some folks that he would like to testify on that couldn't make it today. So we will hear it first, let him present the bill as to what it does, and then we'll be laying that. We don't officially actually have the bill in front of us anyway, so we've got a XXX House file. But that'll be the first bill to be heard. You have it in your packet. It's in the upper right-hand corner, 11-0866. Then we'll be hearing a David's bill for dependent health care coverage to adult children through age 26 for the tax year 2010 federal extension conformed. That's the one you've been hearing about from a lot of your counties and your cities and your small business and your large business to get that straightened out. So we'll be taking a look at that. We have a quorum. We'll officially call the meeting to order, the Tax Committee for the Minnesota House. So with that being said, we will start with House Research regarding some spreadsheets. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, I'm Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff, and we will be working off the document on fiscal letterhead. And we hope that this presentation should not exceed 10 to 15 minutes. We're going to go rather quickly over these documents. My colleague Kathy Schill and I will be talking about revenue estimates, fiscal notes, and local impact notes, and we will just briefly go over spreadsheets. To start, revenue estimates. This is a document that this committee will use a lot. Revenue estimates provide analysis about bill language and how it changes tax collections and state expenditures for property tax relief programs. Revenue estimates are a product of the Minnesota Department of Revenue. Still, fiscal staff reviews every estimate or fiscal note. Please note that revenue estimates do not have administrative cost information. But if there are administrative costs in a tax bill, it will generally be noted on the revenue estimate. Another thing, revenue estimates also include methodology information. All revenue estimates are based on the most recent economic forecast. And revenue estimates in general are static to a certain extent. They have some behavioral change information in them, but for the most part, they are static. They do not include macroeconomic information like changes to jobs or changes in consumer spending or business investment. And there is a memo in your packet from Dr. Wilson, who is the Director of Tax Research at the Department of Revenue, if you want more information about how the department handles revenue estimates and their behavioral changes. Also, let's see, I should note that there are some, in some revenue estimates, they do make some behavioral changes, like for elasticity, if there is a lot of information on how to make that estimate, the department will do that. For example, in alcohol and cigarette revenue estimates, there are some assumptions for behavioral changes. So I just want to make note of that because we will be hearing about that. In addition, there are behavioral changes to property tax revenue estimates when there's income tax interaction. And you will
excuse
be
me, Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question on the static nature of our estimates. Are we unique as a state in providing estimates in a static nature, or are there other states that do that, or are there states that incorporate dynamic measures? I just want a flavor for how in these little learning labs throughout the country, how we stack up.
Ms. Templin?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, I do believe that's that point. It may be in Dr. Wilson's memo, which you have, but my understanding is that most states do have static analysis, and that for California, for example, did try doing some revenue estimates that include dynamic revenue analysis for a while, and they had a model, and it was a very expensive model, but it's something that they did not upkeep, that they later abandoned. And that I think, again, is covered in Dr. Wilson's memo, and if it's not, I'll get you more information about that.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, my experience working in Ohio for 15 years also found that the Department of Taxation used static revenue estimates, whereas the Department of Development would be the one to use the dynamic forecasting. They used a REMI model. So I think it's commonplace to find that state agencies, when they have an interest, would use more dynamic processes, whereas the revenue department, taxation departments, use the more static methodology.
Representative Biskin.
What's that in Ohio?
Ohio. Ms. Templin, okay. Please proceed.
Carrying on, to request a revenue estimate, if you could, please through work through fiscal staff, and we will work with the department on getting a revenue estimate for a bill that will be heard in tax committee. Bills being heard in the tax committee, typically every bill gets a revenue estimate. And if you have any language that you're thinking of introducing, if you would like to have a confidential revenue estimate of a bill, please, again, contact a fiscal analyst, me or Kathy Schill, and we can get that to the department for a preliminary estimate. Again, the House fiscal staff and House research as well, we do complete estimates for bills on income taxes, alcohol taxes, cigarette taxes, corporate taxes, but our estimates are unofficial. Only the DOR revenue estimates are the official estimates, and they are used on the enacted legislation. And again, if you have any questions about a revenue estimate, please contact us.
Excuse me, Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Templin. Is there any attempt after the fact on the part of the department to review and to see how accurate the estimates were? I don't ever recall hearing reports about that, but do you try to see how on target they were?
Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck. There's no formal report. However, sometimes estimates, the changes on the cost of enacted legislation, again, they're included in the forecast, so we can see to the extent how any program or, excuse me, any tax credit, the cost has changed relative to what it was originally estimated, you know, based on the revenue estimate. Or there's also the tax expenditure publication that's produced every 2 years. We can compare what is in the revenue estimate relative to what is in the tax expenditure report. So
Mr. Chair and Ms. Templin, then, so really we don't know, you know, when we look at these, are they going to be pretty, you know, within plus or minus 10% that this is something we can take confidence in necessarily?
Ms. Templin.
Right?
Representative Runbeck and Mr. Chair, there is no formal analysis of that. Just with the regular reports that we get and how we compare it to the forecast.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions at this point? Okay, please proceed.
Okay, and then I also want to point out again in this memo, there's a hyperlink to where all the published revenue estimates are located on the Department of Revenue's website. This list goes back to 1999, And again, these are just the estimates on publicly introduced legislation. All confidential revenue estimates are not included, again, on this list. And then I will turn to my colleague, Kathy Schill, to quickly go over fiscal notes and local impact notes.
Thank you. Before we proceed, any questions for Ms. Templin? Okay, Ms. Schill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Kathy Schill, House Fiscal. For the newer members, this will be old hat for members of that were in previous session. I have a packet here that has examples of revenue estimates, fiscal notes, and local notes. So, and I only made 15 copies, my apology, but I figured it would be going over old information for current members. But if any of the newer members would like a packet, we'll make that available to you. My comments will be on fiscal notes. This committee uses revenue estimates for everything that we do, and I would say about 15% of the time we actually need additional information having to do with administrative costs, and that would be gained by using a fiscal note. Most other spending committees use fiscal notes for everything that they do. We use a combination of these two. A fiscal note is an estimate of the administrative costs or at times revenue impacts, and that would probably be very special kinds of funds that generate revenue that are attributable to a proposed change in law. Minnesota statute section 3.98 requires the content of fiscal notes to include a number of different things, including the statutory provisions affected, the dollar amounts, the estimate of increase or decrease in revenues or expenditures. So if they net out, you can actually see what's going on. Costs that may be absorbed by the agency or program without additional funds, assumptions used in determining cost estimates, and any long-range implication. The fiscal note may comment on technical or mechanical defects in the bill, but shall not express opinions concerning the merits of the proposal. Now, in contrast to the revenue estimates that are done by Department of Revenue, Office of Management and Budget oversees the fiscal note process. Once they've received a legislative request for a fiscal note, the bill is reviewed and assigned to an appropriate state agency or state agencies. The example in the packet is a consolidated fiscal note. You can see that this, I believe, is on Representative Mulry's bill from last session. It included impacts of both the Attorney General and, I believe, Department of Revenue. There was one of the, asking how a fiscal note is requested. Once again, please use one of your two fiscal analysts, Ms. Templin or me, and we can relate, get that information in process so you have that bit of information for your bill. And once again, as Ms. Templin mentioned, all fiscal notes completed since 1999 are available at the Department of Finance website, and you can do a hyperlink to gain that information. And they have pretty comprehensive, so if there is a bill from previous session, you can also look up and see what the estimated impact at that time was. Mm-hmm. Moving on to local impact notes. A local impact note is very different from the other two tools that we just talked about. It estimates the local government or school district fiscal impact of a proposed change in law. Minnesota statutes section 3.987 governs the procedure and the coordination of the local impact note process. It also mentions instances when the local note is not needed, including, and we have a number of, it's on, I believe, the third page of your packet. Local costs due to only to inflation, new programs, or an increased level of service is not generated. Specific local requests, there's a number of different items for which a local note would not be prepared. Now, the impact of this it's overall coordinated once again by Office of Management and Budget with input from local officials. The local impact note might take several weeks to complete depending on its complexity and how many local government officials might need to be tapped for getting that information. Also, you need to know a local note request can only be put into process by a tax committee chair, chair of finance, or ways and means, and that would be in either house, a house or the Senate. And we usually do that from this committee by a formal letter going to the commissioner. Unless there are any questions, we will move on to
Representative Mark.
Chair, what if a member finds that they fundamentally disagree with the analysis and the fiscal note just seems off? I mean, since I've been here, a number of members on both sides of the aisle have complained about how those figures are come by, and there's always a little thought, I think, in some members here that if departments don't like a bill, that they simply kill it by fiscal note. I know they're not asking if there's an appeal process, but what if you just think that these numbers really don't make any sense?
Michelle?
Mr. Chair and Representative Paymar, with respect to fiscal notes and their content, there are times, I would say, where first of all, you need to know your fiscal analyst spent quite a bit of time reviewing fiscal notes and their content, revenue estimates and their content. And often we have questions with respect to information use, assumptions made, and a whole host of other kinds of things, even just checking the math. And so I would, in response to your question, after that kind of review, there still might be questions. It could be a fiscal note perhaps was on a short track and didn't use the full 5 days where they usually have to process. If it was on a fast track, might have had 1 or 2 days. So it is in those circumstances we would look more closely at them, especially if a member had questions, to make sure that we were confident that the methodology made sense, was applicable to the change in law that's being proposed. There are a number of times that we can have further discussion with state agency staff, and we are more than happy to do that. The other thing I might remind you, too, as a fiscal note goes through the process, as a bill moves through the legislature, both the revenue estimate and the fiscal notes are updated, which according to each committee that they travel. So additional information can be provided at that time when a bill goes from one committee or another.
Thank you. That's
Representative Paymar?
No, that's helpful. Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Schill?
I believe now we're going to move to the last tool that you'll use to examine proposed changes in legislation, which is the tracking sheets, our spreadsheets.
Ms. Templin?
Mr. Chair, unfortunately, we do not have page numbers, but the last 4 pages of the packet, it starts with a spreadsheet that says House Tax Committee General Fund Tax Revenues. And this has been included in your packet to show you an example of the accounts on the tax revenue side that you will be seeing. Again, this is the revenue side of the spreadsheet. And the numbers, all the dollars are in thousands, and the dollars are positive because they show revenue. And again, at the bottom, the total tax revenues are $28 billion for the fiscal 10 and 11 biennium. And you can see the accounts, individual income tax, corporate tax, sales tax, and statewide property tax total $25.6 billion out of the total $28 billion. And again, this is just to familiarize the committee with what the spreadsheet will look. And the committee may not see another spreadsheet until the omnibus bill comes out. But when that does happen, you will see the tax revenue side netted against the tax expenditure side, which is the next pages of the spreadsheet. And my colleague Kathy Schill again will talk about the tax expenditure side of the spreadsheet.
tax expenditure side looks like this. It's most, I usually entitled it House Tax Aids and Credits, so you can distinguish between the two. What's important here, members, is that this is probably the most concise, the easiest version of this sheet you will see for this entire legislative session, because when we do changes, I will repeat this sheet plus insert all the changes that you see so you know exactly where it is fitting in. You'll see it's organized by major section, tax refunds, local aids, property tax credits. Moving on to page 2, you'll see taconite tax relief area aids and credits. We have a section on local pension aids, and then we have a section for other expenditures. You will see these sets of columns giving you fiscal 10 and 11 together, fiscal 12 and 13, and then the planning years, fiscal 14 and 15. Our focus, obviously, will be next biennium, and you can see the totals on the very last page. Current biennium totals $3.018 billion in expenditures for fiscal 12 and 13. Spending is $3.522 billion, and for the 14-15 biennium, anticipated $3.6 billion.
And Mr. Chair, also to totally confuse the committee again on the expenditure side, all the spending numbers are positive numbers relative to the tax revenue side, where all the positive numbers are revenue gain. And we can talk more about that later, but it's something that the committee will need to watch when these spreadsheets are released.
Thank you, Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on the tax and credit spreadsheet, how does this spreadsheet and the previous revenue spreadsheet reflect the deductions and things that people have in their income or that businesses can have in their taxable income? Could you just explain how it's reflected on here, if it is?
Ms. Templin?
Mr. Chair, Representative Knuth, the deductions and the credits, they are netted out, and you see on the line, for example, net individual income tax revenue, you just see $1 amount, and that is the dollar amount after total refunds, after deductions and credits.
Representative Knuth?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And okay, that so you can't really, this doesn't really get us into that. Is there any place where we have that information? Where the could you point me in that direction?
Ms. Templin?
Mr. Chair, Representative Knuth, again, this just shows the base revenues, and that information can be obtained from the tax expenditure report or sometimes, if it's a recent change, from the financial forecast. And if there is a change by the committee in an omnibus bill to a tax or a credit, that will be included on the spreadsheet at the time. So you will see that, but every single deduction and credit is not listed.
Representative Knuth. Okay, Ms. Schill.
And one more thing, members. On the tax aids and credit side, we have a catalog to give you very specific information. I've already had two requests for historic information for specific spending items. This will be made available to you at the end of the week. It's currently being updated, but it gives you a snapshot of historic spending and a brief blurb on each of the items and what it's when it was created, what it's used for, that kind of thing.
Thank you very much. And to especially to new members of the committee, because existing members that have served on this committee before realize this, the fiscal analysts here and the House research folks are your new best friends. So they will provide you with a wealth of information. Okay, if Representative Mahoney could come forward for his bill. What we'll do, first of all, any testifiers, and we'll probably be saying this every meeting, any testifiers, please sign in at the sheet there for that says testifier sign in or something like that. Also, what I'd like to do is Representative Dabney moves the minutes of January 13th. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Dabney. Okay, we do have, we're going to be passing out some the minutes from the previous meeting. Representative Sertich moved the minutes and we find that in the minutes there is a date that was incorrect, and so we need to reconsider those. I'd entertain a motion. Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we need to move the date from January 10th to January 11th, and so I would offer that amendment.
Representative Gottwald moves that on the minutes that were approved on the 13th, that we change the date from January 10th to January 11th. We'll wait till they're passed out so you can see what we're trying to correct here. It's simply the date on the first line, or the first sentence, second line. Representative Gottwald would move that we, first of all, reconsider the minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails now. Representative Gottwald, does everybody have them? Moves to change the date on the second line, under where it says minutes from January 10th to January 11th. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. I would not have wanted Representative Surge's last official act to be incorrect. So it is correct. It is corrected, and we appreciate that. Okay, Representative Mahoney, we have a bill that we'll be hearing first here for the Tax Committee here. It's House file. It's listed as an XXXX. The bill has been put in. We should have a number when we go to the House floor today. Representative Mahoney, we do have some folks that would wish to testify. So Representative Mahoney will be giving a brief overview of what his bill does. And then when we can line up the testifiers Representative Mahoney would like, we will hear this bill again. So we'll, I guess we can't take any official action, so we're not even laying it over. We're just hearing it, and it'll be here when it gets here. And then we will give Representative Mahoney the time that he and his testifiers need to explain the bill. So welcome to the committee, Representative Mahoney. Please describe your bill for the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to further explain why the testifiers cannot be here, it seems that U.S. Senator Trump's a House member. This is the same day that Senator Klobuchar is having her Innovation Summit. And when and that's where I'd planned to be this morning. And today, when I sent my reservation in, it was at 250, and their auditorium held 200, so they moved it. And when I checked to get testifiers on Thursday, they were at 400, so they were moving it again. She has effectively trumped me on, and I'm always happy to defer to a U.S. senator.
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, you know.
The way it goes.
And so I'm grateful for the later hearing, later date hearing. There are many people that wanted to testify. This is actually the funding source for the one of the products of last session, the Science and Technology Authority. As if any of you saw the Star Trib this morning, you know, this is not a state problem. This is a national problem. We are, as a state, a little bit behind many other states. States such as Massachusetts, Maryland, Georgia, Alabama, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Kansas, Utah, Colorado, Washington, and Oregon, and California. The lowest of our peer states that have a science-based economic development plan. We are the last to actually put together the plan, the Science and Technology Authority. We are the we put the least amount of money into it. Those other states average about $30 million. This bill, in its early years, generates $7 to $7.5 million in 2012. 2013, I think the revenue analysis, the fiscal analysis, is at $18 million, and caps out at $25 million, which is the cap for this particular bill. It lasts 7.5 years, the same length of time as the Science and Technology Authority. I support the idea of sunset so that we can look at these to make sure that they are working. I will tell you that I spoke with a number of members of the committee, and I got a number of responses. Some turned white, some laughed, some
said that's this is an interesting idea, and in political speak, an interesting idea means that I'm walking out on a plank. So I'm always fine to do that. I've done that. It's not my first time. Members, I will highly recommend that, and I will send electronically the Minnesota Science and Technology Authority's executive summary. It comes up about 7 pages. Just to give you an idea of who sat on this particular authority, we had representatives from Fortune 500 companies in ag, medical device, computers and software. We had laborers. We had representation from labor, from the finance community, from the ag, I'm sorry, from the academics, and from the medical industry. And what this does, and you have the House research briefing, I'm sure, in front of you, it creates, how shall I say, I better take it this way. You dedicate a portion of the growth in income tax withholdings permitted by businesses selected in selected industries in Minnesota. It creates the Science and Technology Fund and the State Treasury. Dedicated amount equals 85% of any increase in aggregate withholding from the designated industries above calendar year 2010 after adjusting for inflation. It's got a few other things in it. The revenue analysis, withholding tax permitted by businesses in the designated industries totaled $436 million in calendar year 2009. It was down from 2086. $486 million in 2008. It's one of those particulars. I think you have a term for it. I think something along tax increment financing or something along those lines. I will tell you, though, that I was looking at it when I first looked at the analysis of it when they talked about the primary science and technology companies. You know, it's a couple dozen companies. I thought, boy, that's got to be half the companies in the state, or not companies, but half a dozen company or business types. Well, I did the analysis, and it covers about 7,000 companies. And in the state of Minnesota, there's 160,000 companies, so less than 3 to 4%. And it also excludes, that list excludes railroad workers, government workers, sole proprietors, family farms, real estate, and insurance sales. So it really doesn't even cover the 160,000 businesses, plus we're talking a very small slice of what we're looking at here. As we try to compete not only with the states that I previously mentioned, but we are starting to fall behind against countries. Is not just a state versus state. This is a state initiative, but we are competing against other countries: India, China, Brazil, Israel, England, Germany. Name quite a few of them. This is a 140,000 jobs over the next 10 years. These jobs pay approximately $70,000 a year. That you folks can tax or untax or whatever you choose to do. Yes, I'm almost done here. I'm not the tax expert, and I will at the later date, whether it's 3 or 4 weeks from now, whenever you have time on your schedule, I will bring those people in. They're all more than anxious to testify in front of the committee about this particular bill. I have I'm at almost at data overload. But frankly, in our peer states, the states that we actually compete against, we are ending up on the lower end of that tier in terms of investing in our own economy. And I'll end with this. We all believe that we are a huge medical and science-based economy. We lost 1.2. Our job growth was 1.2 below what it was in previous years. Whereas in the nation, the average growth in these kind of states, our peer states, was almost 2%. It was a 3% difference in our job growth. We can't sustain that for very long before we are not a player. With that, Mr. Chair, I will take whatever questions I can answer, but again, I'm not a tax expert on this particular.
Well, thank you, Representative Mahoney. And as I said before, we will be scheduling this bill again. I guess we can't really lay it over because we actually don't have it, but we actually have the bill copy in front of us here. We've got a few questions, but just some initial type broad questions, if we could, because we will have the experts come in and testifiers come in and so forth for and against the bill at a later date. So, Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quick, Representative Mahoney, I appreciate you bringing this forward. You and I have talked when I served on your committee last year about the need to focus on these things. But as I'm looking at this from a tax perspective, we're talking, if I understand this correctly, about taking $25 million that currently goes into the general fund and sequestering it and then having a group reallocate that money in the form of grants and loans to specific research and development in these areas that we, of course, need to focus on. I'm just curious why we would take money that's currently in the general fund, set it aside, and then reallocate it instead of simply taking the money in the general fund and allocating it.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, this is taking money from the general fund. It's taking the growth of monies. So it is not taxes that we are collecting at the present time. If we invest, and the best time to invest is when the economy is down, you get pretty much your best bang for your buck, and grow this industry. So why should we do it? Well, Arizona, $50 to $60 million per year. Indiana, $80 million. Maryland, $1.3 billion over 10 years, so $130 million a year. North Carolina, $1.2 billion over 10 years. Pennsylvania, $90 million a year. And that's excluding their what they've invested from their tobacco settlement. Kansas, $30 million a year. Virginia, $25 million a year, just to do exactly what this bill is doing. Members, we did the angel investment credit last year, and I can thank many people on this committee for that. That was a step in the direction. But if we continue to unilaterally disarm, pretty soon it really won't matter.
Representative Gottwald, and then I have Biskins, Downey, Anderson, Lincheski. Representative Gottwald.
Real quick follow-up, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, I think you misunderstood my question. I wasn't asking why we would do this, why we would spend the money. I was asking why we would spend the money in this way. Why would we sequester it, put it in its own fund, put it under the control of another body, when in fact we could do this much more directly through legislative action? We could take that same growth in revenue and simply choose to allocate it because we believe it's the right thing to do.
Mr. Chair, simple answer is, I'm trying to take politics out of business.
Representative Gawal. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mahoney. I do take a little issue with the fact that because we are not spending money like other states, being analogous to disarming ourselves, I don't think money spent always equates to performance and results. So I guess that's something I'm interested in. You listed a number of countries and said that we are falling behind those countries. I need to see the empirical data. You mentioned a number of states and said we're at the bottom half, comparatively speaking. I need to see empirical data on that. You know, money isn't always the answer, and as I look at the activities, I'm kind of surprised to find that Minnesota with IBM, 3M, Medtronic, etc., and supposedly one of the finest research institutions in the world in the University of Minnesota, to hear that we are falling so far behind everyone. Now, and so listing how much money different states spend is very, very different from telling us how that money is actually affecting performance at the end of the day. Because as I look at, and I'll just take an area I'm familiar with, K-12 education, we spend a whole lot more money in St. Paul than we do in Dilworth, and yet I'd stack up Dilworth students with some of the best around the state.
Okay. Thank you for that statement. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mahoney, a couple of questions, and then I'll maybe make a comment, and we can come back to some of these issues when we have a bill and testifiers. You mentioned 140,000 employees over 10 years, and I'm curious where that math comes from, if that's the kind of installed base of employees in this industry or these industry sectors now, or if that's the growth you would anticipate.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and Representative Downing, that would be the growth anticipated in this sector of the economy. So we are now at about 100 to 160,000 employees, either directly or secondary to this particular industry, secondary being the truck drivers and the accountants and the lawyers. This would add another 140 to 160,000 employees.
Representative Downing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's amazing. I'll say off the charts amazing for a $25 million a year annual investment, but I think we can have a broader discussion of how the investment translates into that many jobs. But a second question, Representative Mahoney, do the grantees ever pay this money back, or is this a straight-up grant? In other words, are we as a state going to be the beneficiaries of this massive return on investment?
Representative Mahoney.
In the case of loans, of course they would pay them back, or in the course of business, sometimes I would suspect you'll have one that bankrupts and goes away. And obviously when they bankrupt, they don't pay back loans and that detail. Grants are just as they implied, grants. Quite often they're matching grants, either to public or private, public or private initiatives. Quite often you, one of the big things is the I'm going to read from the summary the what they call me, because I can never get all the acronyms correct. It is one of the bigger items that they do is the Small Business Innovation Research, or the Small Business Technology Transfer. Those are typically matching grants on a federal grant and a state matching grant, and then you have a private part for those particular grants. Your R&D grants that would be done are oft times either through a foundation or through a private business, or in matching with a university. So oft times these are, no, they're not paid back. But in response to your $25 million investment, that's the state's part. They have to leverage private dollars quite often for this, or non-public dollars. Now, I don't think that's in the bill itself, but that's the way that this program works itself out, hopefully in this state and other states.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Mahoney, and maybe this is a work in process. I'll just make a couple of comments and then defer to others' questions, and we can have a deeper discussion on this. But I might suggest some kind of a return on investment model for us when we hear this bill for real. I mean, the concept of investing $25 million a year and creating some kind of industrial behemoth of 140,000 employees, which is probably bigger than IBM worldwide, seems unfathomable to me, but I'm willing to look at a model that shows how we do that. I just challenge this a little bit. We've got an automatic 15% administrative overhead on the funds that we'd peel off out of the general fund which means we automatically, out of the blocks, have a negative 15% return on investment that we have to somehow overcome when we redeploy all this money into the private sector. My sense is that we'd be far better off just offering a targeted tax credit back to these companies and let them figure out how to deploy that capital most effectively. And one of the challenges when we do this, and we think that the state can either pick the winners and losers or be a real player here, and I don't diminish the role of the state somehow in terms of creating an economic development and a business climate environment that's appealing. But every time you do this, all of the creativity of the private sector is deployed to getting the grants from the public sector. And as compared to going out and finding a product or service that actually meets the needs of individuals or of some business trying to innovate and develop, we have people and lobbyists coming down here deploying all their creativity in the bureaucracy trying to be the winners of these grants. And so I just really fear these kinds of programs where we think that the state is somehow better equipped than the current investor complex in Minnesota. So with that, I'll just leave it, and we can come back to all these topics when we hear them.
And again, members, I don't mean to put Representative Mahoney disadvantage here without his testifiers and other folks. I mean, he understands his bill quite well, but let's look at it from 30,000 feet today, because we're going to get right on the ground on it when we have the testifiers. But thank you for that question or comments, Representative Downey, Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, if
or
I...
Or Representative Mahoney?
Certainly, Representative Downey, if you might. When we come back, we'll bring the return on investment dollar figures. Top of my head, I know that Oklahoma is 18 to 1, and they do a very minor one. Texas claims 8 to 1. I don't know Massachusetts or Pennsylvania's off the top of my head, but I can certainly bring that back. And in terms of targeted tax credits, the majority of businesses that this serves, which are startups and entrepreneurs, don't have a tax liability. So you can give any tax credit you want, they can't use it.
Okay, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, if you don't know the answers to these questions, you know, that's fine. I understand we're trying to get more of a broad overview today, but I just thought I'd put them out there so you're aware of them. When you created this the last year, you put in place that they could charge fees and they could also accept gifts and grants of money to kind of get this going. That was kind of the funding mechanism that you used for this when you created it last year. Do you know if they've collected any fees or grant monies, where they're at, if that's in the bank right now, and if they've made any effort to do that at all?
Representative Mahoney?
Mr. Chair, I don't know about the fees. I know that they have access grants, private industry grants to further their mission. But as to the fees, I don't know about just yet.
Representative Anderson.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you know the amount that they've accepted so far?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, no.
Okay, and then,
Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When you put this $25 million in place, then are you assuming that the agencies then would decrease what they do? Because we're replacing some of what our agencies already do. Is there going to be a tit-for-tat sort of situation, so we'll decrease what we have for the agencies in the money that they spend on these efforts, or is this going to be in addition to what the agencies do at all?
Representative Mahoney?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, having sat on a number of committees with you, particularly the economic development over the last few years, I don't think you have any doubt to how I feel about our economic development department. So I would not have any doubts that if some member proposed that we increase pass this and decrease the workings of another department, that I would have any problems with that.
Okay.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Mahoney, just one question, last one, I promise. Why did you not come with this last year when you were chairing this committee, this funding mechanism?
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, when I was chairing the Bioscience Committee, I don't know that they would allow me to chair the Tax Committee. But having said that, last year was the year that we put this into place. So I really didn't have this available to bring forth last year, this funding plan, this strategic plan. Many of you know I sit on committees with, I have hammered I have beaten over the head. I have almost taken a shoe off and beaten it on the table trying to get a strategic statewide plan for economic development. This 7 pages is the executive summary of this particular plan. Again, I'll make it electronically available to everyone. I think it's like a 60 or 160-page report on what they need to do. So we finally have a plan. Had to put it into legislation to require it. Now we're bringing it forward.
Representative Anderson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mahoney. I guess I just recall the conversations that we had, at least in the Jobs Finance Committee, and it was the assumption that what you put in place last year that was self-sufficient, that this is how it was going to operate. And I guess I'm just surprised that you're coming back this year to get $25 million on top of what you already have. So I just want to put that out there.
Thank you. Okay, Representative Lincheski, Erickson, Gottwalt, and then we're going to layover bill that we don't have and go on to the next bill. That's fine. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I did read the document that Representative Mahoney referenced in his testimony, and it's a real easy read. There's the longer document, which I think is 33 pages, and they do some analysis to try to cite some of the information that some of the members have already raised questions about. So you can just download it and take a quick read. And so, Mr. Chair, I'm not going to ask questions about that because I think you've been clear that you don't want to do that now till they're here, and I do have a number of questions. But, Mr. Chair, this is a question really for you, the bigger picture, and I should say that I agree with everything Representative Gottwalt said. This absolutely would be a dedicated tax, new spending, and this committee sees lots of efforts to hide spending in the tax code. And so with silence toward this bill, because there are many bipartisanly where members come in both parties and try to come up with new spending ideas and bring them to the tax committee, and historically we try to tell them to go back to the finance chairs and get an appropriation if it's a good idea, not use the tax code to hide new spending. And I will answer Representative Anderson just straight on here. You know, part of the reason these things didn't happen is because I oppose them strongly. And I will own that for those who like them, and I admit that now we have a new chair and maybe he's going to like these concepts and want to move them forward. But no matter how people feel about them, this is a new $25 million of government spending. We have a deficit, and I'm just wondering, Mr. Chair, is it in your intent to just hear members' spending bills and just for new members' benefit? I guess the committee, I was looking at the roster, it's about half new and half old. We didn't hear any new spending bills for 2 years because of the deficit, and except for we said, if you pay for it, we'll hear your bill. And so we basically didn't hear a lot of people's bills because they didn't want to raise taxes to pay for it. With all due respect to Representative Mahoney, he is actually paying for this, as Representative Gottwalt has delineated. He is dedicating the income tax for this need above all else. So I'm just curious, you know, going forward now, are you going to continue to hear new spending bills in the tax committee?
We will hear, I can't say we'll hear every bill, because at some point we'll have too many bills and physically we just can't do it. But it's my intention to hear bills whether I like them or not. This one I happen to like. I'm the second author on it, I believe, so it's certainly a fine piece of legislation. No, we will be hearing things, and we'll be hearing tax increase bills. We'll be hearing the governor's budget. We'll be hearing everything. So that doesn't mean it gets out of here.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Biskins, to that point,
yeah, just,
and then you
just
still have the floor.
Just this point real quick, because I am new to the tax committee, and so trying to figure out the words. When we allow people of the state of Minnesota to keep their own money, do we call that spending? Just a question.
Representative Lincheski has
the
floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Biskins, that's not what this bill does, though, so I'm sure you're not talking about that. This actually takes income tax receipts to pay for new spending. And Representative Biskins and I have kind of joked about only in government, and I understand the comment. But Representative Davids, just for clarity, for the record, I never did hear bills because I liked them or didn't. What we did in our first 2 years of majority is we heard every single bill. And basically both parties and everybody asked me to stop. We heard every single bell. And we broke all records in the Minnesota House. We went back and looked at every tax chair since the beginning of time, and we heard every single bill there was for the first 2 years. And I just made a decision that there was probably a lot of bottled up need on both sides to get ideas out. And you may make the same decision, Mr. Chair. So we heard every single bill that ever was ever introduced and just about killed everybody in the process for 2 years. Then the second 2 years, we heard every bill, whether we liked them or not, if they paid for them. That was the criteria. If you have an idea, you better come with the money and not just say, here's another great new spending idea. And again, Representative Mahoney is doing that. He's doing it in the way Representative Galtwalt laid out. So, you know, I don't want to leave the impression with Minnesotans who might be watching this that one side or the other tends to just hear bills they like or don't. You know, I was in the minority on the tax committee for 8 years under Representative Abrams and Representative Krinkes, and I thought they were excellent chairs, very fair chairs. I hope you would all think that we were the same way. I think generally people have tried very hard to hear everybody in this committee. It is a tough committee. It's a stressful committee. There's a lot of work. And I know, Representative Davids, you and I have had an excellent relationship, and I think you're going to be an excellent chair. I just want to make sure, you know, as we all think these things through, because we're all busy members and we all have ideas, you know, if you're open to hearing spending bills, then that sort of is a different strategy that's gone on in the past. We were actually trying to get people to come forward with the cuts or to raise revenue. So, you know, just I appreciate the moment or two to just have the conversation, and I appreciate that you've been, you know, really trying to get our input. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And the situation's fluid. So we'll be, it's a work in progress. And I do have some decisions to make in those regards at this point right now, though. And not saying that past chairs weren't open or anything like that, but I would say that if we have bills that members want to hear, I can't see at this point any reason not to hear them. Now, we may get to the point where just physically with time commitments we can't do it. But at this point we can, and so we'll move forward that way. But there'll be some decisions coming on that. Thank you for that. Those comments. Representative Erickson, Gottwald, Rukavina, and then we have another bill up yet today. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, and pardon me for having my back to you, but to speak into this microphone, I have to do that. I was not here last year, and I'm understanding from the comments made that the Minnesota Science and Technology Authority must have been created within the last 2 years. And if that's true, is it a standalone quasi-agency again? So we've grown government. Furthermore, is there not a way for the private sector to do what is described in this summary without having government interference? So those are kind of loaded questions, but thank you.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and Representative Erickson, your first question is, are we growing government by creating this particular authority? And back to Representative Anderson's question, I think that this could actually shrink government. I think that this brings in public-private partnerships to direct our economic development. It is the wave of economic development across the state, across the nation, and literally across the world. So I think if it works out the way it's supposed to, it shrinks government. Your second question, and I
what was this?
Representative Erickson.
It was Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson. Yes, this was created last year. At the end of the year. And your second question was, why couldn't private business do it? Private business can do a tremendous amount. But the way that economic development has operated for many, many years and is even clearer as it moves forward is it will partner with government in order to push areas that they believe they should invest in. You watch China or India or Brazil. Those governments are pouring money into their economic development. We did it a little bit more blatantly in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s with the interstate highway system, with telephone service across the nation. Now it has become much more nuanced. This was not something that government bureaucracy created. These were people from the largest employer in the state of Minnesota had representation on this this board, Mayo, the Mayo Clinic. Some of the largest ag companies, Cargill was there. Medtronic, I don't know if Medtronic or St. Jude's were there. I know that people that had their interest at heart were there. Some of the larger financial institutions. So this is a public, and this is a largely driven, privately driven, privately designed mechanism to create jobs in the state of Minnesota. So contrary to many people's thoughts, I do actually work with business, even though sometimes I have to, well, I won't say it.
Representative Erickson.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney, I think that all of these primary science and technology companies, for example, who are listed under the NIACS codes, could form their own group and pool their dollars in whatever they want, in whatever way they see fit, to create jobs and at the same time receive grants from the federal government, because I often think that we form these groups because that's the way they think they can get federal dollars. But you know, I'm going to have to ponder this creation of this authority as well as your fund, because I think that in the future this might not be for the direction we want to take, even though other states have done this. Maybe we want to stay exclusively within the private sector, but I'll think about this. I appreciate you bringing this forward, okay, so we can debate.
And members, we are going to cut this off in about 3 minutes. I want to get to Erickson, Godwalt, and Rukavina quickly, because we do have a bill that does need to get out today. Representative Erickson?
I'm finished. Thank you.
Or excuse me, Representative Godwalt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quickly back on, I know, Representative Mahoney, you mentioned you wanted to depoliticize this issue by turning it over to this. And again, I'm not going to quibble over at this point whether or not we spend $25 million on this initiative. I mean, Representative Erickson talked about maybe another way of doing it. Certainly we could do it through direct appropriation from the general fund. But when you said you were depoliticizing it, I had to respond, because the Minnesota Science and Technology Authority is made up of the commissioners who are appointed by the governor. That's it. So, you know, I if our goal is to depoliticize it, I think I put more trust in the breadth of our legislature to make decisions about these things than a group of people who are appointed by the governor.
Representative Rukavina. No,
Mr.
I'm
Chair,
sorry,
if I might
Mahoney,
respond to
that point.
Again, yes, the commissioners are the voting authority, and by our Constitution, you have to have a government official vote on money. The advisory board, made up of, again, some of the largest companies, some of the most innovative companies, and some of the brightest entrepreneurs in the state, make up the advisory committee, which put this plan together and does the actual work. But in order for a grant or a loan or any kind of monies to be put out, you need to have a government person vote on it by our Constitution.
Okay, Representative Godwell. Hey, Representative Rukavina, then we're going to go...
Now I'm in trouble.
Rukavina. Well,
thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know you're going to be a fair chairman. You always have been. You know, I heard you on public radio yesterday. You did a pretty good job. There's some things members, I'll keep reminding you that you said there as the year goes on. But anyway.
Members, as the Star Tribune report, I did not say there would be no state dollars in the statement. I said there would be no general fund dollars.
That's right.
And there's kind of like a kinda difference.
I was on the same board. I'm on board with you.
Okay.
But I do have to say, I'm kind of being...
another five meetings.
I'm kind of being pulled both ways on this legislation, which is good for me at 5'3". Maybe it'll stretch me out a little bit. But, you know, I'd have to say that if there's an estimate that you got, Representative Mahoney, that an 85% increase in these primary science and technology companies coming up in the next year is going to make $25 million, well, then we probably don't need to help this industry, because they would seem to be doing pretty good as far as I'm concerned, Representative Downey, right? I mean, if they're paying that kind of things in corporate income tax. But I do have to touch on Representative Gottwell, because we do keep giving up our authority here, and this would be another $25 million that some board that isn't elected gets to spend. And I have been consistent on this. I oppose the sales tax from cars that went into a dedicated account for highways and that, and I think mass transit, because that money used to go in the general fund, and it's not going in there anymore, and we're strapped on the general fund. And I've always made the argument we might as well give the sales tax on, you know, books or computers to the Department of Education, and let Representative Garofalo spend it, and we'll dedicate, you know, chainsaw sales to the DNR and whatever, you know. And then I oppose the new 3/8 of a cent constitutional amendment again. I mean, Representative Drazkowski and I are on the same side on this issue. And by the way, did you know this? Draž in Croatian means charming. but just on the other hand, the verb dražati means to irritate. So, you know, you're kind of a juxtaposition too. But we are. Representative Drazkowski has brought up a good point. We got these people that sit on the Lasard Sams Council that are spending, what is it, 80? Million bucks a year buying land, and we're the third largest landowner in the United States of America, and nobody's got the intestinal fortitude on the House floor. I've tried to do it with the LCCMR to change the bill that citizens tell us how to spend money, and none of them have an election certificate. So, you know, we keep giving away our authority, and I don't really like that. And finally, to my good friend Representative Downey, who I always appreciate listening to, you know, my Edina advisor. Educated by all those Rangers that went to Edina, like Willard Eichela, who's his dad's good friend. You know, but anyway, I like listening to what he has to say. But, you know, I'd have to just point out to you that a lot of the businesses that are starting up here that Representative Mahoney's trying to address got their start because of our great university that every year gets $600 to $700 million of research money from the private sector and from the government, federal government, and does the research that starts all of this going. So it's not just your capitalist system, you know, that creates things and is innovative, but it's our great university too that spurs a lot of this development, whether it's medical devices or bioscience. So we got to weigh all of that as we take another $25 million, as Representative Chesky pointed out of the general fund to give to some non-legislators to decide where it would go up. Quite frankly, Mr. Chair, I trust you to take $15 or $20 million and give it to Gunther, and then Gunther, I trust to tell how to spend it in his bill. So that'd make me feel a lot more comfortable.
Thank you. With that, thank you, Mr. Mahoney. And I think we know that there's going to be lots of questions. Lots of questions, but we look forward to the debate. Thank you again. I don't know if any of you have seen on NPR News here, just a little aside, kind of having to do with jobs here, Wisconsin to hang shingle on the state line. Governor Walker plans placing signs proclaiming Wisconsin's open for business at the state boundaries with Minnesota and Illinois. He's holding press conferences in Superior and Hudson. So if we can get some Mahoney jobs going here, maybe we can put our own shingle up.
Mr. Chairman, to that point.
Yes, to that point, Representative Garofalo.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I just want to point out that if the state of Wisconsin has the money to pay to hang up new shingles at the border, then they got the money to pay us the $58.7 million they owe us. So,
they're busy earning interest on it.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Why did I bring that up? Okay. With that being said, thank you, Representative Garofalo. You're exactly right, in fact. Okay, I will take my bill from here. It's House File 79, and it does have an amendment. Let's talk about. Well, no, I'd like to get in the shape I'd like it first. So I'll move the H007982 amendment. Any discussion on that? That's just to get in the shape we'd like to discuss it. Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. First of all, we'd like to be fair in this committee, as we always have been. And so I would ask if there's anyone that would like to, in the audience, that would like to testify against the chairman's bill. Okay. So with that being said, no, and I'll brief. Well, I think I'll have Mr. Michael briefly describe the bill, what we're trying to do here, and I will just preface it with this is conformity to some legislation that's been recently passed in Washington, D.C. You've probably heard from your counties, your cities, your small business, your large business folks that are having trouble to comply here. The question's been asked, why aren't we doing this for 2011, 12, and 13? This is just for 2011, oh, no, just to make it 2010? I'm sorry, 2010 tax year. Thank you. For 2010, not 11 and 12, because, number one, we wanted to keep the cost down, and we will be hearing shortly more conformity issues that do actually cost some more money. But, Mr. Michael, if you could please describe to the committee what the chair's bill does.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what this bill does, as the chair described it, is to adopt for tax year 10 the new federal rules that say that tax-free or pre-tax payments for health care coverage for largely children who are either older than 19 and not in school, or older than 23, whether they're in school or not, qualify on a pre-tax basis. The second thing, based on the amendment that it does, is it says that employers who have already issued W-2s that list in box 16 the amount of the taxable fringe benefit under the law as it stands, under Minnesota law as it stands now, do not need to issue corrected W-2s. Instead, the expectation is that the Department of Revenue will simply notify taxpayers and tax preparers that those amounts that are in Box 16 do not need to be reported. And so this is only for tax year 10, which is the current filing season that's going on right now. It started as of last Friday.
Okay, thank you. And members, one thing that we would like to do is if there's a handout to be passed out, this one is from me. It doesn't have my name on it. Some support for the bill here. And I think many of you have probably heard from your, like I said, counties, cities, small employers, large employers. This is one that can really make life a lot easier for a lot of people. And you can look at the fiscal note, about $200,000. That's just because we're doing for tax year 10, not 11 and 12. Questions? Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, do you happen to know where this $200,000 would go as far as income levels and progressivity?
I do not, Representative Brookavina. Mr. Michaels, would you be able to address that question?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, we don't have specific data on that. My guess is that it's just sort of middle and average income. It's obviously a very small amount of money, but it's basically people who have health plans that allow them to cover these individuals back before the open enrollment period. And so as you think about it, it's just whoever is in a employer provided health plan normally, and the reason why the cost is so small is that we're only talking about a very short period of time. And most of these plans only allow adding people after you go through the open enrollment period.
Representative Rukavina?
Well, no, Mr. Chair, I was wondering, because if I am a steel worker and I have health insurance through my my employer, and then I'm assuming I have to pick that up for the 26 or 27 year old, most plans that have already been bargained might not have included that, so that's the type of income earner who would be getting this tax break.
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, that's exactly right. Somebody who's in a typical employer-provided health plan that's often associated with either large companies or with unionized employees or government employees would be the individuals who are affected by this.
And Mr. Chair, if I'm wealthy enough, which I'm not, on a salary to have my own coverage that I'm buying, is that covered then for a family that's buying their own coverage too that can afford to pay that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, this is coverage that's provided on a pre-tax basis. Typically, if you're buying individual coverage in the open market, bridge in the open market, that, you know, that's done with after-tax income that you get an itemized deduction for. Okay. So this is the coverage that's usually associated with employment.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate you introducing this bill, Mr. Chair. I think it'll be hard to find somebody who doesn't think it's a good idea to conform on this provision. And, you know, federal conformity really is just us lining up our tax code with feds, and generally we're passing on tax cuts to Minnesotans that Congress has passed. And, you know, there's an important reason that you're hurrying, and I appreciate that. We're trying to get at filers who are filing now. But there are a number of other federal conformity provisions for this year. There are many for next year, and I'm certain we're going to work on that. As you've stated, the Bush tax cuts are now the Bush/Obama tax cuts that, to conform on that, I think will cost the state over $100 million. And so we'll need to figure out how to pass on all those tax benefits to Minnesotans. But even in the current, the 2010 filing year, there are a number of other provisions that we need to conform to, in my estimation. And this bill only conforms to the one. And I'm just wondering your thoughts on why you're choosing to, you know, sort of give this the preeminent status of getting out of a committee early. For example, those who have IRA transfers that they have to deal with, that's another piece of this legislation that the federal government passed, and those folks who have IRAs and have to make their transfers are waiting to find out if they can make charitable contributions. Is there a reason you're intending to not conform on that, and why you don't want to pass tax benefits on to those folks?
Thank you, Representative Lincheski. Basically, the reason is this: something that, you know, you could argue that they all need to be done quickly. This a lot of it has to do with dollars. This is something we can do quickly. All groups seem to have come together on this, supporting this. I think it's a good idea to do this. But as we look at other conformity, we are looking at the $100 million and the $50 million and the $10 million, not just $200,000. So this is something we can make a lot of people's lives a lot easier if we get this passed through, so that they, you know, they're coming in and saying, well, what do we do? Well, we need to fix this as quickly as we can. So my motivation on this is simply dollars. This is something we do quickly that would take care of a lot of folks real fast. Representative Lincheski. Well,
Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that and agree with that, but along those lines, you know, why not conform permanently? Because this bill conforms for this year, and then we'll have the exact same issue next year. And I know it gets more expensive, so it is a dollar question, but nonetheless, these are tax cuts for Minnesotans, and, you know, I just trying to think about why not be done with it once and for all. And the IRA transfer issue, and folks are going to start hearing from their constituents about this if they haven't already, the federal government has allowed people with IRAs another month to wait and hold, to wait for places like Minnesota to pass the bill. So that's another very time-sensitive tax cut for those folks who can transfer, do their IRA transfers for charitable contributions. So, you know, I didn't come prepared with amendments today, Mr. Chair, and I heard you say, and I did not know that, but I heard you say that you're going to vote this bill out of committee today. But I, you know, hope we could have a discussion about how we could get the rest of conformity tax benefits done for Minnesotans, you know, maybe before the floor. So, and I, Mr. Chair, just finally, you know, trying to think it through out loud here, you know, I don't know if you've worked with Governor Dayton on it. I don't know what he's selecting through the Department of Revenue. I generally, when conformity is up, you know, the Department of Revenue has a lot of thoughts on that, and I don't know if they're here and they're going to testify to your bill. I have not spoken with them. I know all the departments are in flux, and, you know, members should also know that this piece of federal conformity actually passed in March, and the previous majority attempted to pass this and could not get the governor to go along, again, to find the dollars to pass on these tax cuts.
Based on a much larger tax bill than just this piece.
Yes, that's true. We actually didn't ever vote on this piece because we couldn't get agreement, and we wanted revenue to be able to come to the table and say they supported it. So we actually never pursued it. We worked on it sort of offline. But I appreciate that you're pursuing it here now. And this is a huge tax benefit for folks who have their kids on their health insurance, and I think we all support that. But I just you know, just trying to understand it. You know, I'm assuming, I think the Senate's hearing it today or tomorrow, and I'm hoping, you know, I would imagine, I can't speak for the governor, I'm sure he's, you know, they're supporting in general, but just kind of the whole conformity piece, and if you could just give us feedback on that, your calendar for kind of moving this through.
Well, you bring up a very good point, and conformity is an issue that is very time sensitive here. This one has to do with the W-2s, of course, that are due by the end of January, so some of those things, technically, we could go a little further out, and they could still, when they file their taxes, take care of it. This one is, we're talking January 31st. So it'd be my intention to put this committee open to all conformity issues, and then we'll figure out how to pay for it.
Thank you, Mr.
I'm finding that's quite fascinating, trying to figure out how to pay for it. That's, yeah. So,
thank you.
Any other questions? I have Representative Downey and then Loeffler. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions for the author or staff. Do we know how many people this actually does impact? And if you stated that before, I apologize for not listening closely.
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, the revenue estimate occasionally will have a projection of how many taxpayers are affected. This one does not. You know, given the dollar amounts, you know, we could probably make a guess, but I don't know how relevant that is because they're largely allocated from federal estimates, and I'm not sure that really reflects the, you know, precise experience in Minnesota.
Tim Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Then just to follow on, do you have any sense or could staff provide any sense for us as to how many conformity issues we're going to have as a direct result of the federal health care bill? Is this one of 100? Is this one of one? How big is the overall conformity issue for the federal legislation?
Well, it is. There's a lot of conformity that doesn't have to do with the federal health care bill. This one does happen to, you know, have to do that. I don't know. Mr. Michael, do you have an idea?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, there are a number of other items in the federal health care legislation that will create conformity issues. Some of these, the Department of Management and Budget have concluded are now sort of automatic conformity items that, regardless of what the legislature does, behavior will change. For example, the Section 125 pre-tax flexible spending accounts, for example, that allow you to set aside money to pay for health care related costs. The health care legislation reduced the cap on that from $5,000 to $2,500 and prohibited paying for non-prescription drugs, if you don't, over-the-counter drugs, unless you get a prescription from your health care provider. The MMB, not surprisingly, concluded that the change in those rules will result in people following the federal rules regardless of what Minnesota does. And so, for example, the revenue that would come in as a result of that is now included in the forecast. But there are changes in the rules for the itemized deductions. There's a revenue estimate that revenue did that is probably better for me just to make a copy of and give to you. The itemized deduction limit, which raised it from 7.5% of AGI to 10% of AGI, is the sort of the big one that takes effect, I believe, in tax year 12 or 13. Excuse me. There's a couple of other provisions in here that are not healthcare related that they're, again, I think, assuming are largely automatic. The codification of the economic substance doctrine. There's also an adoption assistance provision. Again, neither of those directly related to healthcare.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then one final question. Do we have any opinion or testimony from the Department of Revenue on this? It appears that we're allowing people to if they've already filed, to just leave their tax returns as is, but if they choose to between now and whenever they file to take advantage of this, they can do that. So it seems to me that we're adding a decision tree in the Department of Revenue, and they're going to have to do a careful scrub of the returns to see whether they did it one way or the other. It seems like there's an administrative overhead here as well. Do we know what Revenue's opinion is on making this change midstream?
Representative Downey, we will be bringing Revenue down when we get to all the questions here. So I do want to hear from Revenue and some other folks who would like to testify for the bill. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I want to say thank you for bringing this forward as quickly as you are. I think it's a good example of us working in partnership with the federal government to improve things for the people we serve. And it's also a good example of how state innovations have been taken by Congress and made even better. This state passed, and I think you were a co-author with me, of the bill that extended this benefit to children age 24. Back in 2007. And since then, there's been some complications, and it's one of the most popular things I've done. I get calls all the time from people who don't have this benefit because the federal ERISA law kind of carved them out. And so this says everybody in Minnesota will have this potential, and it takes away an income tax complication. Since we were a leader, the tax reform, the tax provisions that the federal government didn't apply equally to Minnesota, and ultimately 14 states adopted that. We weren't the first before the federal government made the law of the land. So thank you so much. I think this is really helping individuals and families make sure that they have the kind of coverage that is needed in that transition point to adulthood. We heard from a lot of kids who are on internships and other things that just couldn't keep their medications and other needed health care going. But there's another provision in the Federal Health Care Reform Act that provides for a small business tax credit based on their premiums. That's not going to work for all small businesses, but I hear a lot also from not just families that are struggling with health insurance, but also small businesses, and I would hope that that's one of those you got on your list to bring forward fairly quickly for us to talk about as well. Thank you,
Representative Loeffler, and all the conformity issues are on my list to debate and discuss. So, okay, if someone from the Department of Revenue could come forward to state their comments on the bill. Scaring me there. If you could please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. Excuse me, long time for me not talking. My name is Dan Lee. I'm director of the Withholding Tax Division for the Department of Revenue.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Pam Dahlstrom. I'm the director of Individual Income Tax for the Department of Revenue.
Ms. Dahlstrom, is that D-A-H-L-S-T-R-O-M?
That's correct.
Okay, welcome to the committee. If you could make a few comments on House File 79.
I can make this very quick. The Department of Revenue supports and advocates for this proposal. We think it's a taxpayer-friendly proposal, both for employees and employers. Resolves a lot of issues associated with just the complexity of reporting. The sooner that we can do this, the better. The questions that you've been hearing from constituents are the same that we have been hearing from the Department of Revenue. By questions, I mean concerns as well. There are reporting issues associated with this that are probably disproportionate to the value of the bill. There are software, many of the payroll portions of the of employers use software that is having a difficult time accommodating the separate reporting that we have asked them to do, so that we have the information if we do not conform. So we see conformity to be a good thing. In addition to that, there is a difficulty for employers and employees alike in calculating the value of the insurance they would have to report for income tax purposes. So, again, we advocate for the proposal.
Any questions for Mr. Lee or Ms. Dahlstrom? Okay, thank you very much, and thank you for being here. Anyone else who would like, you've got a letter that I authorized that's been passed out from the I think it's the Minnesota Business Partnership with their thoughts on the issue. Anyone else would like to come and testify for the bill? Please state your name and who you represent for the record. And we do go till 12. That doesn't mean we have to. With that being said, if you please state your name for the record and who you represent, sir.
My name is Rick Varco. I'm the political director with SEIU Healthcare Minnesota. And
can
I'm
you
just
please spell your last name?
Varco. V as in Victor, A-R-C-O.
Thank you, sir.
And I'm just here to introduce T. McClenty from our union, who will make a brief statement in support.
Okay. Miss, how can you please spell your last name?
M-C-C-L-E-N-T-Y.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Davis and members of the Tax Committee. Thanks for hearing me today. My name is T. McClenty, and for 15 years I worked at St. John's Hospital as an emergency room technician. I was recently elected as the Executive Vice President of SEIU Healthcare Minnesota. We represent 17,000 healthcare workers across the state of Minnesota. But today I'm here to testify in a more important role, and that is as a mother. I have a young adult son. Early last year, we received notice from my husband's insurance company that my son would no longer be eligible for coverage under our insurance plan. Like many young adults, especially given the terrible recession, he had to cross that great divide from school to a job with benefits without health insurance. As his mother, I worried how he could get care if he were to get hurt. Worse, I worried if he delayed seeking care for something that may hide a more serious threat. I did not want him to start his independent life with a huge medical burden of debt. That was why I was happy when President Obama's health care reform bill included a provision that must cover young adults up to the age of 26. Under the bill, if a parent has insurance, the companies are required to extend coverage to their young adult children. After the Affordable Care Act passed last March, I contacted my insurance company. They quickly acted to conform to the law, and in May, we got a letter placing my son on my husband's medical coverage. The President's health care reform bill brought my family the more peace of mind that we needed. Shortly after my son was placed on health insurance, he broke his wrist. He required a bone graft from his hip to his wrist. He had the surgery done at the Mayo Clinic. This was the kind of event that my husband and I feared would happen. I would like to thank you, Chairman Davis, for promptly bringing forward HF 79, which will conform to Minnesota tax law to federal tax law. Like other health insurance benefits, coverage for young adults would not be taxable at the federal level. HF 79 will make sure that this new benefit will not be taxable under the state law either. Without HF 79, Minnesota parents like me who were able to gain coverage for their children would have to do a separate set of tax calculations for our state tax returns. Not passing HF 79 would make Minnesota taxes unnecessarily complicated and make compliance harder. I'm sure we will continue to debate health care reform, but I hope the legislator can come together making taxes more simpler. Thank you for hearing me.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifiers? Okay, thank you very much. Anyone else would like to come to testify for or against the bill? Please join us, sir.
Good morning.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
My name is Todd Koch, K-O-C-H.
Thank you, sir.
I represent the Minnesota Society of CPAs. And I really want to thank the committee for trying to address the conformity issues early in the session. It is really important. Taxes are complicated enough. These additional complications make it hard for small businesses, which are typically my clients, to comply. They just don't know the rules. They don't know everything that's going on. And they either make errors or they have to pay me more money, both ways, which hurts small businesses. Yes, I'm one of the few people you ever hear, I'm trying to make less money rather than more. So what you can do to comply earlier than later is really good. I applaud Representative Lincheski for bringing up, there's a lot of conformity issues. Many of them, some of them are very, very expensive. The depreciation ones, very expensive. Others, the $250 for the teachers, very, very easy to, very small cost to do, like this one here. So I appreciate you bringing up whatever we can do to help conform, make it easier for taxpayers to comply with the rules, which they want, makes it easier for the Department of Revenue to monitor the rules and holds down their costs, and people can pay me less money. And that, because an additional cost of compliance is the same thing as a tax increase. So whatever we could do to hold down the cost of tax compliance is really good. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Koch. Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one final question for the author. Some of the testimony left me a bit concerned. Just to clarify, we are
voting strictly on the mechanical processes of filling out our W-2s and not on whether to actually adopt any provision of the Federal Health Care Act. Is that a fair interpretation of your bill, or are we actually, by virtue of this vote, actually voting on some provision of federal health care unbeknownst to us as we're voting?
Well, we, Representative Downey, we are, we'd be voting to conform with current federal law and actually lowering people's taxes by doing so in this case. You know, I've heard people saying, well, you're voting for Obamacare. I don't look at it that way. I'm looking at conforming with a current law to lessen the taxes in the for the people of the state of Minnesota. So I guess you can look at it any way you'd like to on that. I'm and my campaign brochure is not going to say I've supported Obamacare. It's going to say I support the taxpayers and lower their taxes, is what it says, or will say. Representative Downey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's actually a really important distinction. If in some way approving this tax conformity is actually one of the very first steps from a conformity standpoint to adopting more completely and fully the federal health care reform, and we're starting down that path and creating a precedent for the tax committee to simply, I'll say blindly, that's too strong a statement, but without due consideration to whether or not the totality of what we do from a conformity standpoint actually implements at a state level the federal health care reform, that's a broader implication of this bill than I think we heard in testimony. And I, at this point, am preparing to cast my vote simply on the technical merits of conforming for tax preparers and citizens, and not thinking that this has any direct, you know, bearing on whether we as a state move forward with fully implementing the federal health care legislation. I just want to make sure the committee shares that same understanding as we cast our votes, as compared to thinking that this is the first step of many to agreeing to the full implementation of the federal health care law here in Minnesota.
And thank you, Representative Downey. It's my intention that this is a technical correction. With that being said, let's look at it a little further, and let's look at a couple things here. First of all, this is for 1 year, the 2010 tax year, and what I've been struggling with is, okay, that's, you know, now we look at it for 2011, 2012. Then we also have to look at the issues. You know, we can only deal with what's here today. But if the Republican House in Congress defunds Obamacare, is that a possibility? Yeah, it is. That's where the money starts. And so there's a lot of implications out here. What I'm trying to do here is actually, seriously, a technical correction to make it so that we can form that part so that Minnesotans don't get stuck with some higher taxes. It's Representative Lencheski, and if there's no one else that has any questions, we'll vote. But you, Representative Downey, your point's very well taken. Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you know, Mr. Chair, I do think it's fair to say that voting for this is supporting the national health care reform provisions for taxpayers. Absolutely. But I would hope that the committee would be able to set aside... I would hope the committee would be able to set aside, you know, that far left, far right ideology and get into the wars on this stuff. This really, these provisions, as the chair stated, are tax cuts for Minnesota. So, you know, if folks don't support those, that's certainly understandable. There'd be many people in the legislature would argue we can't afford tax cuts right now. Others who would say we should pass on these tax cuts. The history of tax conformity in Minnesota has generally been pretty silent on the politics. And I will, for example, tell you that I am carrying a conformity bill that I hope the chair will hear that will conform to the Bush tax cuts. And, you know, we may have some members on either side of the aisle say we can't afford to pass on those Bush tax cuts. I'm authoring that bill. It will cost Minnesotans money, but legislators will have to choose. Do they want to give tax cuts to Minnesotans that were just passed by Congress or not? We don't have to. We can have folks add that back in on the Minnesota side. So the rhetoric can heat up in this stuff pretty fast. Generally, you see both parties have tried to do conformity where it's affordable. For example, Section 179 expensing, which is a huge tax cut for businesses. Both sides of the aisle have tried to get the money through to get that done. it's an expensive item. I think it ticks up every year, 50 million, 70 million, I don't know what it is right now. Generally, the tax conformity pieces, they are passed and signed by presidents, passed by Congress and signed by presidents. So I think, you know, you're right, Mr. Chair, to say, you know, that's not what you're going to, you know, sell it as. And I think we know that the way politics works in Minnesota, somebody may try to sell it one way or another. I want to agree with you, Mr. Chair, that while this is a confirmation of a piece of national health care reform that is in current law and could, in fact, be repealed by Congress. That's right. And then it wouldn't matter. You'd go back and reverse it. What these really are tax cuts for Minnesotans who are going to put their kids on their tax on their health care. So the way it would work if we don't conform is you get this tax cut on your federal form, you slide over and you do your state form, and you have to add it back in. So you rightfully say, why did the Minnesota legislature just raise my taxes by not letting me have that tax benefit that Congress just gave me? So, you know, this is why people want to be in the tax committee. They're tough votes, and people get in a box on them, but I do think the history is to try to be silent on which president on either side of the aisle is doing what, and I hope we can pass on the Bush tax cuts to Minnesotans, and I'll be carrying that in its entirety, the whole boat, not just the ones I like and don't like, and I really hope we can get everything possible conformed to this year.
Representative Godwalton, Clare.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Lencheski, I appreciate your comments. I you know, we're going to hear this kind of rhetoric over and over again, and I don't want to impugn anybody's motives because that's not what we're supposed to do under rules, but, you know, there are things about the federal health care changes. It was a massive package of changes. It was not one thing, and I think we serve Minnesota best by looking at what is best for Minnesota. And so if there are aspects of whatever was passed in Congress that benefit Minnesota, both in the short and the long term, then that's how we ought to be evaluating it, not based on whether or not it's going to label us as having supported Obamacare or not. There are certainly other parts of that legislation that are very objectionable to certain people, and we have to respect that as well. But I think, you know, bringing up that kind of stuff in this committee is not going to get us very far in helping Minnesota become a better place. So I appreciate the question and the concern. Personally, I'm going to be evaluating this stuff based on whether or not it helps Minnesota.
Representative Kiffmeyer, then Druskowski, then I'd like to take a vote. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In regards to this particular element, I agree that on the federal level there are components that I liked, components I did not like. In this particular area, though, I think we in the Minnesota legislature have already spoken to age 24. I think conforming it for the ease of filing and other conveniences so that we have one age, the age of 26, maybe in previous years they could have chosen 26, but they didn't. So I think in this issue I look at it as a tax conformity that really just plain makes sense. Minnesota had a position before at age 24. So I look at this piece as I do any of these things and saying that this will be a good step to take, and I do support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kiffmeyer. Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just have a comment along the lines that were made earlier. Representative Lencheski, I appreciate your foresight on a lot of the tax conformity stuff, but I reject the notion that anybody on this committee taking a vote has a meaning tied to it that suggests that we somehow support the Obama health care program, because I do not and I will not during this vote be casting it from that light. Members, this is a tax conformity vote. It's tax confirmation. It is not a confirmation of something else.
Okay, with that being said, anyone else wish to testify for or against the bill? Representative Paymar?
Just quickly, Mr. Chair, as long as we're not going to impugn anybody here, let's call this bill, Representative Gottwald, what it is, the title of it, and let's not use the term Obamacare, which is a way to deride something.
Okay, thank you, Representative Paymar. Thank you very much. I would renew my motion that House File 79, as amended, be passed and sent to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, members. You'll be notified of the next meeting. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.